So on a more serious note, this is a day that we set aside each year to honor the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a man that I consider to be one of the great prophetic spiritual leaders of the 20th century. And today I wanted to talk to you a little bit about followership. I know that technically that's not a real word, it's kept auto-correcting to fellowship, but I think it should be a word because there would be no leaders if there were not people willing to follow. And if there is such a thing as leadership that we can study and analyze, then the same should be true for followership. So I always reread some of my favorite sermons and speeches by Dr. King to prepare for this Sunday. And reading his words reminds me just how bad the blatant racism was in our country in the 50s and in the 60s, and especially in the South. But the more I learn about the truth of the ongoing legacy of slavery in this country, the more I realize that we have really not come that far in 60 years. Last week, I had the opportunity to hear Brian Stevenson speak at a lecture at UCSD. Stevenson is a lawyer and the author of a book called Just Mercy, which I commend to you. He has dedicated his life to attempting to commute the sentences of condemned people, people on death row. Stevenson threw out some alarming statistics to the audience. In 1972, the year that I was born, there were less than 200,000 people in prison in this country. Today, there are more than 2.2 million. And I learned even more from the website of the Equal Justice Initiative, which is an organization that Stevenson founded back in 1989. Listen to just some of these statistics. In the 90s, as lawmakers campaigned to get tough on crime, America built a new prison every 2 weeks and still could not meet the demands for prison beds. Violent crime has fallen by more than 51% since 1991. And property crime has decreased by more than 43%. Although the crime rate has dropped steadily to about half of what it was in 1991, the spending on jails and prisons reached nearly $81 billion in 2010. Today, nearly 7 million people in this country are incarcerated, on probation, or on parole. Private prisons that are operated by for-profit corporations have multiplied by five, they were multiplied from 5 in 1989 or 1998 rather to 100 in 2008. And profits have increased more than 500% in the last 20 years, creating perverse incentives and hindering efforts to reform sentencing laws and establish rehabilitation goals and reduce the prison population. The United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world, and mass incarceration has devastating consequences for people of color. At the dawn of the 21st century, 1 in 3 Black boys and 1 in 6 Latino boys was projected to go to jail or prison in their lifetime. How can we hear that statistic and not be taking to the streets? The courageous activism in the 1950s and 60s did result in progress toward the civil rights for African Americans, but the underlying myth of racial inferiority that deeply permeates this nation has not been eradicated. Today, it is good and right to celebrate the leadership of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and all that was accomplished during the civil rights movement. But it would dishonor Dr. King and all he stood for to not also acknowledge that there is a great deal of work left undone. We are still very far from done healing the deep wounds and the legacy of racial inequality in this country. We, and by we, I especially mean white people, have much more work to do together because this racial chasm, this open sore of inhumanity, of separation and oppression, will not heal on its own. This wound does not just exist in the ghettos or in Southeast San Diego. No, this wound exists deep in all of our own psyches, in our bodies, in our memories, in our dreams, and it will not go away on its own. In his sermon, Remaining Awake Through a Great Revolution, Dr. King said, "Somewhere we must come to see that human progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals who are willing to be co-workers with God." Today, that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about being co-workers with God, because that is what we as a people of faith are called to do. So maybe the word God doesn't work for you, and that's okay, because we can slide in a lot of different words and it'll mean the same thing. We are called to be co-workers with love, with the universe, with truth, with the angels or the ancestors or the bodhisattvas, whatever it is that speaks to your heart. But this is what that means. We are each called to follow the North Star of our own higher self, to direct our thoughts, words, and actions to align with the GPS coordinates of compassion and justice. We are called to be followers of the truth. Now, for many of us, I know the term follower has negative connotations. In the extreme, it might bring to mind images of the followers of a cult leader like Jim Jones, people who followed him willingly even into their own death, or the Nazi soldiers and prison guards who were just following orders. But even in our everyday experience, the word follower implies a blind faith, an unthinking, uncritical dependence upon someone else. We suspect that it has something to do with the surrendering of our individual agency or essential selfhood. Through what history has taught us and our own lived experiences, many of us have developed a keen eye for discerning whether or not a person is practicing genuine leadership. We listen carefully to see if the speaker's agenda is about serving others instead of ego-based self-aggrandizement. So many of the national figures and politicians who are referred to as our leaders are corrupt and self-serving, and that so that many of us have become wary of the word leader itself. It's not that we won't follow anyone's leadership. As Rachel Maddow explained, humans are ambitious and rational and proud, and we don't fall in line with people who don't respect us and who we don't believe have our best interests at heart. We are willing to follow leaders, but only to the extent that we believe they call on our best and not our worst. A good leader clarifies and expands a vision for the future, a vision of possibilities and not limitations. The role of a true leader is to inspire, to draw forth the best in people, to hold a vision of an ultimate goal and continually urge people to move in that direction. Rosalind Carter said, "A leader takes people where they want to go. A great leader takes people where they don't necessarily want to go, but ought to be." It is the people themselves, you and I, who determine who we will follow, even into places we don't want to go, but know on some deeper level we ought to go anyway. We agree to be led. I think many people mistake for strength the refusal to be led, when in fact it is caused by their insecurity. Some people instinctively rebel against leadership in any form, much like a child perpetually revolting against the authority of his parents. In their struggle for ultimate freedom, they don't see that, like the child, they are far more controlled by their own reactivity than people who carefully and thoughtfully choose to follow. Stephen Covey says that leadership is communicating to people their worth and potential so clearly that they come to see it in themselves. I love that. There is something, I think, deep in us that knows the truth, that wants to be inspired and to have our very best called forth. At my seminary, about midway through the program, every student sits down for a formal assessment. And we meet with five professors or faculty members of our choosing. The teachers look at all the courses that we've already taken, and they suggest a direction for the student's next steps. So during my assessment, I picked five people whose wisdom I trusted most at the school to offer me their guidance. At that point, I was absolutely positive that I was not interested in pursuing parish ministry. I was certain that it was not for me, and that my career path would be chaplaincy. All five of the wisest people I knew challenged me on that. Independent of one another, they each told me that they saw in me the ability to lead a group of people. They saw me as a parish minister and urged me to at least try a parish internship. I was dumbfounded and terrified by the prospect. But I held those five people in such high regard. I had such faith in their wisdom that if they thought I should consider congregational leadership, then maybe, just maybe, I ought to. I allowed them to lead me, not where I thought I wanted to be, but where I ought to be. And I'm grateful. Their belief in my potential was a tremendous gift that liberated me from my own fears that would have restricted my options. So I read a disturbing article the other day that said that the North Pole is moving rather rapidly away from where it had been, that it is moving so quickly that the models that we use to know where it is have to be adjusted. So in a sense, the North Star no longer points exactly north, or at least it's pointing less and less north as the North Pole moves. So in shifting times like these that we find ourselves in, it is easy to become disoriented. It's easy to become lost from the truth. Our egos, our small, scared selves, get in the way and start clouding our vision. So I invite you to ask yourself, what is it or who are you following and why? What is your guiding light? Are you navigating your life by the truth as you know it, by love? Or are you allowing, in some ways, your fears to fog up your navigation system, your desire to be comfortable, your preoccupation with being innocent, your need to be seen as a good person? When we get confused, when our compasses get spun, there are tools to help us remember the truth. You've heard the term that Christians use, "What would Jesus do?" to help guide them in followership and decision-making. Well, I've offered up a rephrased version for Unitarian Universalists, which is just simply, "What would love do?" Like those words that we heard in the reading from Ralph Waldo Emerson, a person will worship something. We have no doubt about that. We need now more than ever to be firmly rooted in the truth. And I believe that we each know deep down what is true. We recognize it when we hear it. It grabs our attention. It makes us sit up and listen. And if it's something we really need to remember, maybe something that we have lost track of a little bit, tears will well up in our eyes upon hearing it. There's an ancient Chinese saying, "The sage points to the moon, and the fool looks at the finger." Truth is the moon, and the leader is merely the finger pointing to the moon. A leader is someone pointing to the truth. To become good followers, co-workers with God, we need to seek out those who are pointing in the right direction and keep our eyes trained where they are pointing. If we are to truly honor the spirit of Dr. King, then we need to identify and follow the the leaders, those people who in our time are pointing to the truth, who have their eyes trained on justice, those who speak out against oppression of all kinds with the voice of compassion. There are many contemporary people right now who are making me sit up and listen, bringing tears to my eyes with the stark truth of what they are saying. Brian Stevenson is pointing to the truth. The freshman Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is pointing to the truth. The Reverend Dr. Barber, leading the Poor People's Campaign, is pointing to the truth. And there are many others. These people are casting a vision of the world that we want to live in. So let us allow the truth that they are saying shake us, agitate us. Let their voices lift us out of our complacency and into the streets and into the courthouses and the voting booths. Let us become a mighty group of followers as they lead us right into a more just and loving and compassionate world. May it be so, and amen.